It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Today is the day to wake, work, and win. Welcome to The Standard. Kevin, aside from a career in the fire service, most people know you for some of the big calls you've been on, mainly the rope rescue in 1991. Can you talk about that and how training played a role in that?
Oh, absolutely. That's all it was. As a matter of fact, I think that would be an example of where training really saved the day, if you will. When the rope rescue happens in New York City, it usually means things are not going well. It's not something that we want to do or plan to do, you know? And it's something that we practice even from probie school. But in probie school, everything is set up a certain way, and there's anchoring points, there's this and that. And then they tell you, well, if there is no anchor point, you can always find one if you look hard enough. Breach a wall on the roof, or, you know, chop a hole through the roof, whatever. They give you all these suggestions. But when things are not going well and you can't, you know, that particular roof had a parapet wall and then a penthouse on it. And the penthouse was actually like a whole nother floor. It just had between the parapet roof, the parapet wall and the penthouse wall was like an alleyway. So there was, and it was masonry, all brick. There was nothing you could breach quickly to make an anchor. Top floor fire, so I can't chop through the roof looking for something quick. And it was one of those situations where the fellow was going to possibly jump soon and fire where he was. So I think what happens with the training, I don't want to get off point there, but when you train hard and hard and hard enough, it becomes rote memory. And it's like a double-edged sword. We're always telling people, think through, don't just act. Think through. But sometimes when it's a very stressful situation, you really want your body to react automatically, muscle memory, and, you know, the jokes about throwing 10 pounds against the wall, hopefully 5 pounds sticks. That comes from just training and training and training over and over and over. When things don't go as well as planned, like at that roof rope rescue, I'm not focused thinking about every detail, because a lot of it's on automatic pilot, and then I can focus my energy into just the few parts of the evolution that were not how you usually lay them out, and I didn't have to think about everything, just one or two details looking for an anchoring point or whatever, because the rest of it, you practice it so much that in an emergency, you're not thinking. And, two things, and if I go too long, Tom, stop me, but one of them is I always mention a fellow named Michael Higgins. And Michael Higgins, great guy, and he broke me in the truck company. And his dad, Ed Higgins, was my captain in the engine company, engine 227. And he broke me in there. And one of the things that Captain Higgins did, he had gotten a big influx of new guys in a short period, a couple of months. Some probie classes had gotten out, and also some guys that were not first grade, like myself, transferred in. So this guy out of a company of 24, 25 guys, he's got 8 guys that all at once with like less than a year. And he's talking like a third of the company. So how does he get the engine company to be really sharp as you drill? He's an old school guy, and he was sharp. And he just said, well, every time we get a phone alarm, means the person called it in, not just pressing a button on ERS box. a phone alarm with an address, which there still be false alarms, but not as often is a false alarm called in with an address. Usually they press the box in the corner and the kids walk away. So every time we had a phone alarm with an address, we had to stretch a line. And it was still busy in the earlier 80s and mid-80s, and we were stretching line quite a bit, even though the companies around us knew it was probably a false alarm. And I remember being a new fireman and thinking, you know, you're trying to get the acceptance of the older guys. You want to fit in. You want to be a big, great fireman like the other guys around you, and you're probably trying to prove yourself. I remember thinking, this feels stupid. I bet the guys are laughing at us or this or that. They weren't. The other companies, the senior guys, were looking. They were just looking and nodding. They talked to the captain while we all stretched the line to where we knew there was no fire and then went back. And I believe to this day that an engine company lives and dies by its stretches. And, Tom, we became, like, really good at it. Was it young, strong, motivated guys? Yeah, but there's lots of young, strong, motivated guys. It was that constant drilling. And the drill didn't have to be a complicated scenario that your officer creates. He just said, stretch a line every time there's a phone alarm. And we went through everything, picking up a hydrant, stretching a line, and packing the dry hose. And, you know, the hose, the line packs back up quick when it's never been charged. But that did the trick. Within a year, you know, less than a year, 6 months, we were spot on with our stretches. Never short stretching, never having too much line. Never say never, but, you know, so infrequently that I don't recall it. Short stretches there or too much line where you're trying to flake it out in the hallway or in a stairwell and, you know, you're getting all kinds of kinks and knots because you got too much line you pulled off. We mastered the stretch. So the biggest drill was just being given a task and repeating it over and over. Well, when I left the engine company, I went to 108 Truck in Brooklyn, and Eddie Higgins' son, Michael, was there. Michael had the same mentality. He just drilled all the time. That was a motivated, tough, motivated guy. Great, great fireman, great guy. And, you know, life goes on, like all of us. We move on. A lot of guys have, you know, wives and kids. And now, today, a lot of women firefighters, I'm sure they have kids at home. Everybody's working second jobs. You know, society is what society is. Life is life. It's the same everywhere I go around the country teaching with the younger people that are in the fire service raising families. It's stressful, you know. Financially, it can be stressful for the first few years. Everybody's working two jobs. What happens? You go in for a night tour or sometimes for a day tour. You're exhausted because, you know, joke about it. All the high-tech work I had basically was like delivering lumber and digging lawn sprinklers by hand. That's stuff I did on the side at the time. So it's natural to be tired and go to the firehouse. And sometimes it takes more motivation than others to keep drilling, especially you think you know something, you want to relax, study, read a book, or, you know, sit in front of the TV between runs. A lot of guys say lack of motivation. Sometimes you're just exhausted, but that's not the way it is. You know, fire department is your first career. It's not a part-time job, not a hobby, and you have to be dedicated and, you know, muster up the will to keep sharp and drill. And Michael was that guy. So every time, you know, you were tired and thinking you're going to relax a little bit, Michael come up with another drill. He was great. You know, I've heard that term. I don't know who first said it or where it was written, that we don't rise to the occasion. We sink to our level of training. And I don't think, as far as training, truer words were ever spoken. That's absolutely what it is. You sink to your level of training. For myself, I know that there are times when you're stressed, and some guys will think, well, you know, stress doesn't bother me that much, or I'm tougher, or nothing bothers me. They don't understand, or they have not been in that situation yet. Well, real stress is when you're physically exhausted. Maybe your foot or your leg is broken and you still have to remove yourself from a position. Still, maybe they lower a rope to you. You have to tie it around yourself. Who knows what the situation is? And we do our best, but sometimes there's only so much you can think about. And if I can, a simple-minded guy like myself, if I can alleviate the burden of having to think about everything, because a lot of it's rote memory, and I can reduce the amount of decision making I have to do. Maybe I can be sharper with those few decisions, you know.
So when you're talking about someone being trapped, you know, in, with the broken leg under collapse, you're talking about your call at the World Trade Center first bombing 93, correct?
Yes, I had a bad fall at the first bombing in 1993. And, I fell 4.5 stories at that call, and broke my right ankle, broke my left knee, I impaled a bar through my leg, broke my nose, knocked my teeth out, fractured my skull. So, you know, even though I was trying real hard and trying to be a great fireman, and, you know, you can't help it. Especially, I was guilty of being in, you know, late 20s, early 30s. You think you own the world and you can do anything, run through fire, all that, you know. And that's what I'm saying about if you think that you're calm or stress doesn't rock your boat, you know, I wasn't the toughest guy, but I was pretty good under stressful situations. I, you know, performed adequately. But I'll tell you what, anybody's boat can be rocked if it's rocked hard enough. And you're laying down there and your legs are busted up. There's fire all around you. Nobody can get to you. And you fractured your skull. You know, do you think that you're thinking sharp? You barely, you know, of course you're not thinking sharp. But I was able to perform a lot of things down there, and I don't barely even remember doing it. Some of it was effective, some of it wasn't. But I tell you, Tom, you feel better if you're performing some duty. You know, if you feel helpless, that's the worst part. So even though I was down there, I was able to remove where I was impaled, get my leg off that bar, a piece of rebar. Slide a distance to get away from some fire because there were 200 cars on fire underground, and slide a distance away from the fire, and you know, kind of half crawling, half sliding on some stuff that had, you know, your head's cracked, your legs are busted, not a lot of thought process going on, you know. So
yeah, for sure.
That's all that automatic pilot, and it's a shame because when things like that happen to me, whether it's that first rope rescue or the bombing later, one of the problems with those situations is it looks so dramatic. A lot of people like, well, that ain't going to happen again. Well, that's not going to happen to me. Well, I'll tell you what, brother, I didn't think it was going to happen to me either, you know? And we don't predict when things are going to happen. And it doesn't have to be that extreme, you know, that dramatic for the message I'm giving you about drilling to death to really have to come into play. It could be everyday stuff.
A lot of your examples of the things that you've done, you have been completely mentally taxed and still needed to perform. And the only way to establish a baseline where you can think while you're exhausted is to train while you're exhausted. And you can do that with a little bit of motivation, but that goes away at some point and discipline starts to kick in. How do you stay disciplined to keep your training up even when you're exhausted?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'll be brutally honest with you because I'm already retired, so I can't be fired. Tell you the truth. People are people. People are all the same. Humans have been around for how many thousands of years? We haven't changed that much. We think we have, but we've not. Human nature hasn't, I don't believe. So you look around the firehouse. Guys are in great shape. Being in great shape takes discipline. You can't work out once a week. Whatever reason you have, some guys excel more at the discipline. Now look around the firehouse and how many guys have a business on the side. It takes discipline. You know, one guy's digging lawn sprinklers, but a third guy owns the lawn sprinkler company or owns the landscaping company. He's got discipline to do what he has to do. And, you know, he's still not just working, but he's running a business. How many people in your department have college degrees? What did it take to get the college degree? And even tougher going back as an adult. So it's funny that we'll say to ourselves, and I understand it, well, how do you get the motivation and the discipline to drill all the time? Well, we've all had the motivation to do what we want to do or what we think is important. So this might sound like a little bit of dysfunctional thinking. I I guess I get some of this from my dad, you know, to be kind of hard sometimes, but at the same time, I apply it to myself. I try and be hard on myself. But taking the option, the drilling shouldn't be an option. You have to take that option out. This is mandatory. This is the way it is. The other stuff falls, it comes later. And what motivated me the most was the one to try and be the best fireman you could be. But at the same time, not always the healthiest motivation, but incredibly competitive, ego-driven. More, you know, you didn't care if you lifted more weights than the other firemen. You didn't care if you had more degrees than the other firemen. But you were going to step over that guy's back if you could. You were going to take the nozzle. You were going to get to the roof faster. You were going to cut the roof. You know, it was extremely, extremely competitive in FDNY. The engine companies around me, the truck companies, and the rescues. Competitive to what could almost be, if not reined in by a strong officer, a very dangerous point. Guys would take chances, and it was ego-driven. Now, is that the best motivation? I guess they'd say no, but, you know, I am what I am. That's at the time in my life where my mind was at. I could be calm, and a lot of things didn't bother me, you know, and I didn't consider myself a competitive person by nature until it came to the fire service. Nobody was going to move a line faster than me in my head. Nobody's going to take the door faster. Nobody's going to, you know, I was going to be first one in, last one out, all those things. And today, again, here I am at FDIC, great instructors, and from all over the country, firemen from all over the country, all over the world taking these classes. And, you know, a lot of them are struggling with how not to let people, you know, let their ego get in the way, not to let guys break safety rules to be more competitive. But to tell you the truth, at that time in my life, that's what the huge motivator was. Life goes by. Now my career got cut short, and it's only been training because of the injuries. I never left the fire service or quit, but I couldn't do what I did do before that accident, a lot of surgeries and physical therapy. So, you know, in your early 30s, you're still in great shape, you're all pumped up, setting the world on fire, and you're just looking at the guy next to you, regardless of how big or strong he was. I'm going to beat that freaking guy. It may sound dysfunctional, but that's where I was at that point in my life. And I'm sure a lot of guys at that age can relate or agree with me. Then more time goes by, a lot more fires go by, and you see more tragedies, and, you know, you're doing your best. And then, you know, the motivation shifts or competing for not really recognition, just only recognition amongst your peers, your immediate other firemen, competing to be better than the guy next to me starts the transition to competing with yourself to be the best for the public, to not accept the loss at any, you know, cost. If they happen, you know, we lose people, but I didn't find any loss acceptable. Just did my best and it didn't work. Many times and gone before you get there, and what could I do better? And I think as I just, you know, as a person became older and more mature or whatever, the motivation was as strong, but it was different motivation. Not ego-driven to compete with the other firemen, driven morally to compete with myself to serve the public better.
With these big calls you've been on, how big a role did fitness play in it?
Well, it led me to success in some rescues, more than one, and it led me to survive something that was could have gone either way, and both had to do with being in good shape. Now, you know, I joke about it, and I look at you guys. You guys look like Adonis. You're like bodybuilders, you know. I was never in that shape, but, you know, it's something that I worked out for work. And I remember my dad. I was proud of my dad. He was a captain of Engine Company 82 back in the days when they wrote the book about it in South Bronx. He was lieutenant in Squad 2 and 73 engine and fireman in 40 truck. And he was my idol. He went to more fires than I ever saw. And he's still alive today. And he kept some dumbbells underneath his bed. And that was back in the day, you know, in the 60s when I was a little kid. A lot of guys were not working out. Working out was not the norm, if you will. But he was always doing push-ups and sit-ups and, you know, and he considered it minimum maintenance to be a fireman. He was not, you know, the jokes about curls for girls or trying to look good. He couldn't care less. You know? If you saw the way he dressed when it didn't annoy my mom, you'd see that appearance was not high on his priority list. Unfortunately, I think I got that from him, too, because my wife gets annoyed at me. But anyway, the thing was, we were not appearance, but we were performance. Never in my career did I personally find that I needed more strength or like couldn't perform something because I wasn't strong enough. You know, I was more than strong enough for anything I wanted to do. Where the weakness would come in was in your legs and in your wind. And I'd come in with X amount of stairs, and remember, it was 7, 8 floors. If it was well over 9 floors, you waited for the elevator, and if it was 7, you always ran. But when it got to the 8, 9, it was like, do I run up or do I wait for the elevator? Because you might reach the 10th floor real quick with all your equipment, but you're going to be shot, you know? And if you're going to just walk up at a pace that you're not shot, you might as well wait for the elevator.
Let's switch gears just a little bit. And I know that the FDNY has a very close-knit, almost like family. And I think that a lot of other departments want to get there. Like, what does kind of that brotherhood mean to you?
It means a lot of different things. First of all, brotherhood, sisterhood, basically like a family. So I look at it more as a family. And I love just, you know, with work or teaching, whatever I'm doing, walking into a firehouse. Because the guys and girls are all pretty much the same, or same personalities. You know, 9 out of 10 are great wherever you go. So it's a comfort level to go in and see strangers and talk to them like you've known them, because you do know them. They're in the same, give or take, same income bracket. They're doing the same work. They have the same worries and concerns. They have a family or don't have a family. There's only X amount of categories that people fit into, and you've experienced all of them. So the fact I'm in a different city or different state doesn't make a difference to me. That's why I consider it like a family. But as far as being in shape, and here's where I hope I don't go off the rails compared to a lot of other people or other guys that you do these podcasts with. And this is something that was drilled into my head back from my dad. It's not all pleasant and rah-rah. You also, you know, you got a responsibility. Basically, you gave your word. And guys that say, or girls that say they didn't give their word, they're lying. Because when you wear a Maltese cross or you put some sticker on your car and all, and I'm not big on that myself, you're telling everybody, hey, that's who I am. I'm a fireman or I'm a firefighter. So if you're going to say that's you, who you are, well, you best be that person. And anything that does not get done, it's like a giant circle. Anything that doesn't get done, it's not like it just doesn't get done, it doesn't happen. If you don't do something, that means somebody else had to do it. Whether it's just cleaning the kitchen, clean the toilet. You know, the toilet doesn't clean itself. The meal doesn't cook itself. If you slack, then somebody else is doing their job and yours. Well, it's the same if you're not in shape. It's the same at a fire, but with a lot more at stake. If I don't get up to that stair or get up that door or something else, well, either somebody else has to do my job because I didn't do it, or you let the public down, well, how can you run around with a jacket on, go to a party, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your wife, your husband introduces you, oh, that's so-and-so the fireman. What a great guy. Thank you for all your service. If you're full of crap and didn't do anything, you know. I'm trying real hard to use good language and not curse.
Kevin.
But you can see that my mind is in more stronger language. I don't have a lot of tolerance for the guys that slack all the time. We all have a bad day. There's always a day when we don't carry our weight. We're not on our best, and our brothers and sisters carry us. Don't be that guy all the time. Try not to be that guy ever. And when you don't do something, if you're not in shape, then how can you claim you're a fireman? You know, you can't. Don't tell people you're a fireman. Don't say nothing. Say, I'm a city employee.
How do you deal with guys you work with that complain too much? Because I mean, sometimes it's just out, you know, out of coping.
We all complain a little bit.
But other times it's just every little thing is something to complain about.
The wet blankets.
Yeah.
I've heard it before. I heard it given in a funny way to a guy that was a good guy. So this doesn't mean it to sound as harsh as it was. It was funny. A guy in the firehouse in the truck company, there's a guy across the hall in a different engine. And he was complaining. And the city was unfair to him. And, you know, something was wrong. Now, don't get me wrong. This guy was not a slacker. He just was cranky that day, you know. But it was funny because he's going on, and he doesn't see the chief walk in behind him. And the chief's listening to him. He's like, you know, F the city, F that. You know, who do they think they are, you know? We do so much more than they deserve. It's on and on. He's just having his childish rant, you know. And the guy's name doesn't matter because, to tell you the truth, he was a great guy. Everybody in his companies were great because they were very busy. If you didn't like it, you could have transferred out. And he fought to get into this company. So I know he was just, you know, that guy's mouth off, don't know what to say. Like I said, we were all young and stupid and whatever. But he was going on and on. It was pretty funny. The chief comes in behind him and puts his hand on the guy's shoulder. So you see the guy's eyes open up. We're all giggling because we saw the chief walk in. And, of course, as great brothers, none of us said a word. We let him keep going. So the chief comes in. You know, son, he says, you're right. He says, I've been listening to you, and everything you said is right. He says, you know what? They really are taking advantage. And it goes on and on. The chief had him hooked, you know. Like, back in the day, they were better to us. And, you know, I could see the trend. And it's been coming along for a while, and they are taking advantage. The public does appreciate you. The chief went on. Where the guy starts letting his guard down, thinking the chief is on his side. So chief says, so, you know, that being said, why don't you just pack your you-know-what and get out that effing door? Because there's 1,000 guys that want your job, kid, and I don't want to hear it anymore. Pack your you-know-what and go. And he said it left, and we all, like, were silent. We laughed and, you know, looked at the guy. That's the bottom line. You don't like it? Get out. Everybody wants your job. Everybody wants to be a fireman. There's a long waiting list of guys. There's no shortage of men that want the job. So the next time a guy's bitching and moaning at the firehouse, you say, hey, you know what, why don't you just pack your stuff and go? Hey, you know what, the whole world, you know what, they are taking advantage of you, and it's not just. And because I love you like a brother, I hate to see you taken advantage of, so why don't you pack your crap and get out, you know?
That's probably a pretty common situation in the fire service, everywhere, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put you on speed dial.
Sure. Call me. I'd be glad to tell anybody. You know what?
I'll put you on speed
You're
dial.
You're so unjust. Why don't you just pack your shit and go? And, you know, it sounds harsh, you know, dysfunctional thinking, black and white, but what else is there really? You can pick that apart 1,000 ways. And the guy, and when a guy's got an attitude like that, do you think he's giving you 110%? You know he's not.
No.
So guess what? Not only is he complaining and a downer mentally and annoying, you're doing his work. Somewhere along the line, that guy's not doing his share. He's coming to work late, leaving early. It's the same guy. Get rid of him. Everybody wants that job. If he doesn't like it, tell him to go. I hate to sound so mean about it, but that's how I feel about it, you know?
So you retired from the FDNY in 1998, but you're still in the fire service. I mean,
still in the game.
Yeah, whether it's FDIC or I know you do a fair amount of public speaking, but you know, if there's one thing that you could change about the fire service, today's fire service, what would that be?
Occasionally, I'm running into a lot of people that seem to have taken too many classes but didn't master the ones that they should have. I'm big on basics. Everything today is advanced. Everybody wants another patch on their coat, and that's fine, you know. But I read something, a quote somewhere. It's funny. It was a fly fishing book. I think it was called Secrets of the Fly Fishing Masters, which cost nothing to the fire service. And they were quoting, each chapter had a quote from somebody, and they were quoting a gold medal wrestler. And they said to this guy, you know, I see that you don't use any advanced moves, yet you always are winning. You're undefeated or whatever. And his answer was, I master the basics until they become advanced. And I think that would be my message to the fire service and training. I think that they're always on to a new gadget or a new something where I think the stuff is great. Some of the new technology is great. But I think that basics are neglected. And I think that if you mastered the basics, these advanced either tools, equipment, or techniques would be a supplement and would enhance your performance. But they can't make up for not having a strong foundation. And I think a lot of us are too quick to move on to the next page because we think the first page is either below us or not prestigious enough, and they're not mastering the basic.
Yeah, I like to parallel sports with the fire service quite often. I think there's a lot of similarities, especially when, like you said, it comes down to the basics. I was watching the Final Four this year, and one of the articles posted online was the UConn men's basketball team, and it showed video and photos of all the players, you know, doing basic passing drills and basic ball handling drills, like ball through the legs and dribbling around the back, and the stuff that every kid who ever played basketball when they were in elementary school did. And it just goes to show you that that's really what high-level athletes, and I think the same thing is true for the fire service. When you are a really good firefighter, you've mastered the basics and you keep practicing them. Like, you don't look for the next best thing.
It reminds me of that quote from Bruce Lee. I fear not the man who has practiced 10,000 kicks once, but I fear the man who has practiced one kick 10,000 times.
Yeah, I mean, right? It's like you can't get it wrong.
You can't get it wrong.
Yeah.
Yes, master them.
Exactly. Well, Kev, thanks for joining us. I know you're at FDIC right now, so thanks for taking the time out of that event to spend some time with us.
You take care. Thanks for having me.